G'day, Indy Wood is my name, and you are listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events, and personalities from around the Bega Valley. Well, this week it is National Homelessness Week. So in that vein, we're going to catch up with Christine Welsh, who, along with her husband, started the Sapphire Coast Community Pantry based here in Bega. Those guys do a whole lot of amazing work to assist those who might be struggling financially, those who are coming through the end of the great fire disaster of the recent summer, and those who might be struggling a little bit with the COVID situation. The Sapphire Coast Community Pantry is our theme for this week. And on the local update, as we do each week, we'll catch up with local historian Graham Farram. In last week's episode, Graham mentioned a bank building on the corner of Church Street and Carp Street, which led me to realise that that building that is still a bank has been basically since Bega's original development. In that vein, Graham has this week decided to look at the commercial history of Bega from its beginnings.
It's a great pleasure to be back in the foyer of the Bega Pioneers Museum after a long closing time. I hope you've been enjoying the podcast. Thanks to Indigo Wood. Today, like the first one that you heard, we're actually here, and I've got a few friends of mine who I haven't seen for a bit of a while, and it's wonderful to be back. I've been looking at Bega's commercial growth, and where we are right here, this was the centre of town once upon a time, and everybody came here either from the road that comes from the west or the road that comes from the north, and then into Bega, up Bega Street, Church Street, into Carp Street. But I've been looking at the commercial growth through the eyes of Bailey's History of Bega, which you can buy from the museum. We've got copies of that here at the moment. I've been using one that I've had for about 3 months from the Council Library, because they've only opened again today. So I'm going to go and see the library and see if I can renew them again, just for fun. So I'm on page 34 of Bailey's History. In the early days, money was scarce and barter was the general rule. When in the 1860s, Fred Byrne acted as land agent and auctioneer, his cheques were passed as currency from hand to hand, while he negotiated cheques for the few settlers who had accounts with the nearest bank at Braidwood. As far back as 1858, the establishment of a savings bank was advocated, but did not materialise. In 1864, Bega Post Office added money order business, and the efforts of W.H. Brain were rewarded in 1867 when J.G. Beasley, as manager, opened Bega's first bank, a branch of the Commercial Bank of Sydney. It may be remembered that Brain, as headmaster of the National School, lived and worked next door to the bank at the lower end of Auckland Street, and that he recorded an evening visit from Beasley in his diary. It will be something new in my life if I have made a friend of him. Is it my fault that I do not make friends? That's from the biography in Bailey. Frederick Byrne, too, as auctioneer and land agent, soon rose to be a person of some consequence in the town, and those who did not love him soon learned to fear him. Now, I haven't seen exactly what happened with that story, but Fred Byrne unfortunately died rather young after attending an auction sale out at Candelow. He was meant to have something like about 200 sovereigns on him, having sold this land out there at Candelow. Tried to cross the Wollumla River in flood opposite Frog's Hollow at Canoona out there on his way back, was washed away and never found. There's a bit of a story about that in Dagmar Byrne. If you have a look at Sandra Florence and Di Pryor's book, They Made This Valley Home. So you might have feared him even, which is In 1869, Byrne bought out a competitor and at the end of the year secured the post office from his neighbour, W.R. Sharp, the local paper assigning a political motive to the change. Bailey's biography of Brain also notes that he was a forceful and independent character, holding steadfastly to his opinions, whether popular or not. He was described in the Southern Star newspaper on the 23rd, 1918, in possibly an obituary, as a man who courted no man's favour and feared no man's frown. Bailey also records that after ably conducting the school for 3 years, he took up farming at Tanger, returning in 1870 to purchase the Bega Gazette, which he subsequently conducted on free trade principles for 30 years, with the exception of the years 1877 to 1881, when it was owned by Oswald Welby. We learn something of Welby's coming into the possession of the Bega Gazette from the biography of Mrs. Lily Welby in They Made This Valley Home, as told by Sandra Florence and Di Pryor, Bega Valley Historical Society, Incorporated, 2012. And we have copies of that book here that people might like to come and have a look at. Bailey's biography of Brain continues. For many years, he played a foremost part in public affairs in Bega, being closely associated with every public movement and assisted the foundation of many institutions. He occupied positions as secretary to the School of Arts, Agricultural Society, Bega District Jockey Club, which was formed in 1866, Bega District Hospital, which I might speak of on another occasion, and was elected alderman of Bega Municipal Council in 1888, holding his seat for many years. On page 34, we find W.H. Brain as honorary secretary to the Bega Agriculture and Pastoral Society's first show committee. The first Bega show was held on February the 15th, 1872. Bailey records that although the committee had only £43 to work on up till show day, this did not prevent the staging of a fine collection of exhibits. Notable among these were Gowing's farm implements in a non-competitive section, his Ransom and Sims maize thresher, Garrett's threshing and winnowing machine, Hornsby double furrow plough, Ransom and Sims' turn rest plough, and Garrett's patent horse hoe were all included. The show was held in and around the first Bega School of Arts, which opened in 1869. On page 40, a fine library was installed, and in 1872 the secretary opened a writing class to enable the young men of Bega to learn to write their own names. Perhaps Brain was the secretary to open such a writing class. In his first term as editor of the Bega Gazette, Brain also reported on early clergymen. In the Gazette of 15 2nd, 1872, he records, "A Bega clergyman needs an iron constitution to sustain, for any lengthened period, the physical exhaustion of the arduous and fatiguing journeys he's obliged to make." Bailey records that on Sunday, November the 17th, 1872, Reverend J.J. Westwood, Baptist evangelist, visited the town and baptised two males and one female in the Bega River Junction. He preached for about 2 hours to a most patient audience. And at the conclusion, the congregation sang, "Shall we gather at the river?" That's in the Bega Gazette. 12th of the 11th, 1872. As an ex-teacher, Brain also reported in the Gazette on both denominational and national schools. You possibly recall the wretched slab hovel that was the Wollumna School, which he visited and recorded his opinion of in his diary of 1866. Speaking of the Roman Catholic denominational school in Bega, Bega Gazette 5, 6, 1873, states the school is spacious and well ventilated, the latter no unimportant feature in a building used for educational purposes. However, on the 28th of the 8th, 1873, the general discipline of the school was very unsatisfactory. The children knew nothing and were learning nothing. With Welby at the national, as headmaster at the national school, Bega, the Gazette recorded that the school inspector reported, "The interior of the school is nice and clean, having lately been whitewashed." That's the Beagle Gazette, 11th of the 9th, 1873. That's page 40 of Bailey. Page 44. When Brain repurchased the Gazette in 1881, he began a twice-weekly issue. Of course, transport issues continued to beset the people, and the Gazette was forced to comment. As Bailey puts it, in the 1880s, settlers at Tanjin, Nelson and the Murra were forced for many years to convey their goods through Bega to the boat at Tartara, as there was no punt at the Bega River mouth. The ford across the river at Tarraganda, even in the driest seasons, was difficult to cross. Tarraganda Crossing grew to be a bugbear. In 1882, it was reported, the Gazette, 17th of the 6th, 1882, the river is up at Tarraganda. Of course, traffic is suspended, and some 2,000 people shut out from communication with the town. Speaking of bridges, on page 37, Bailey makes the observation, periodical floods disrupted all transport, and even slight freshes made the rivers and creeks unfordable. For whole winters, the rivers could not be crossed in Bega at the Auckland Street and Tarraganda Crossing. However, at the same time, dairy products were making their way to the fore. Page 50, 28th of the 6th, 1882. A gentleman now on a visit from Sydney informs us that in Sydney nothing will go down but Bega hams and cheese. Bailey continues on page 52. Industry had already made advances by this time. Coopers, brewers, blacksmiths, coach builders, brick makers and boot makers turned out products at prices competitive with Sydney. Shegog opened Bega's first cooperage in Auckland Street near the school. Bricks were made near Bega on Howard's property. Corn flour was still milled at Marimbula. Additional banks opened branches in the town. Quoting S.J. Ray, I Sought Adventure, page 195, Bailey writes, in 1885, life in Bega was like a lazy dream. Time meant nothing and no exciting events ever occurred. In the summertime, a siesta was the universal custom. The midday rest usually found double lines of bullocks lying in the dust in the main street. Brain, who had been Ray's employer, made an editorial plea for progress in the Bega Gazette, 2nd of the 4th, 1891. In this town and district, the want of mercantile cohesion loses to our community thousands of pounds annually. The time is gone when anything will do. We are losing our old monopoly of making cheese, butter and bacon. In scores of places, factories have sprung up, and their products are sharing a market which was once ours exclusively. Cooperation and extension of the factory system is the key to the problem. The Farmers Union Sydney Depot should sell at top prices the products of a factory whose brand would tell the truth about quality. Butter sent to the depot must be reliable. Cheese must be something more than curds shaped into a solid cylinder. Bacon must be boneless. Hams must be nutty to the bone. Quality and appeal to the eye must rule all our staples. The means to the end is cooperation, factories, local cooling rooms, proper packages, an increase of neatness and taste. Part of my external reading has been the Odes of Horace. Now, Horace was born in about 53 AD, something like that. Flourished at the time of Virgil, who was his friend, and Augustus, and got himself a patron. He was rather pleased about that. It let him be a Stoic. His patron bought him a farm on the Tiber, and he was rather pleased with that, except one day when the tree almost fell on him on the farm. He wrote an ode about that, but I'll give you that one later. It's a problem. It can happen here. It happens now. I've seen death by accident on gravestones here in Bega. Now, this is Ode 10 of Book 2. He did four books of odes, made himself a bit of money with that. He's giving an admonition to a young friend, I think, on how to be good in the world. Now, his young friend is Licinius, but I'll take a little bit of liberty with that, and I'll say, young Indigo, to live wisely, shun the deep sea. On the other hand, straining to dodge the storm, don't run too close into the jagged land. All who love safety make their prize the golden mean and hate extremes. Mansions are envied for their size, slums pitied for their rotting beams. The loftiest pines, when the wind blows, are shaken hardest. Tall towers drop with the worst crash. The lightning goes straight to the highest mountain top. Hopeful in trial, shy in success, the seasoned heart knows luck will swing. Jove brings foul weather. Nonetheless, he soon supplants it with sweet spring. If things go ill now, before long they'll mend again. On certain days the bow lies slack. The sleeping song wakes in the lyre Apollo plays. When hardship comes, show a brave mind and a bold face. But when the gale follows too fawningly behind, be prudent, reef the bulging sail. And that's from the Odes of Horace, a Penguin classic. Mine's quite an old one. First published in 1864. Mine is a reprint of 1873. Not too bad. Thanks very much.
Graham Farram is a member of Bega's Historical Society and a member of the Bega Pioneers Museum. You can catch him every Monday in the Bega Pioneers Museum at about 11 o'clock, where he'll recite some of his research into the history of the Bega Valley. And these days, you can hear that research on The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events and personalities on indymedia.com.au. The new episode of the podcast is released every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. This week in Australia is National Homelessness Week, and with the recent COVID event seeing unemployment rates soar, homelessness becomes an issue in a number of communities, including regional ones like here in the Bega Valley. Over the last few years, Christine Welsh and her husband have worked to set up the Sapphire Coast Community Pantry based here in Bega. The pantry really is aimed at anyone, but works, hopefully, to help those less fortunate, whether they be in financial trouble, suffering from a disability, or feeling isolated from the community that they live in. I caught up with Christine recently.
My husband and I, we moved down from Sydney in about 2014, and we didn't know the area at all. We just knew it was a beautiful place and we wanted to retire. And we quickly got involved, and we thought the best way of getting involved is doing things that we like doing and being involved with like-minded people. So we joined the Social Justice Advocates, we joined Pambula Rotary, and I also, he and I were on the steering committee to set up a community meal place at Pambula called Pearl's Place, sort of based on Ricky's Place. And through that, I then noticed that there was also a lot of food wasted at supermarkets and what have you. And so I started up a branch of Oz Harvest down here. And then through that, I thought, you know, there is more than this, more than just vegetables, because that's all we were collecting. And I knew people had a need. There are a lot of hungry people, a lot of people living in poverty, be it short-term or long-term, a lot of homeless people down here. So I thought we need a community pantry down here. So we did a lot of research. We visited five different pantries in New South Wales, ACT, and I think Victoria, to see how they operated. And we picked the best of the bunch. What we wanted was a place where people could come to not feel embarrassed, ashamed, judged, or questioned. We just wanted a place everybody, and I mean everybody, was welcome to come in and shop. People who could well afford to go somewhere else, they almost subsidise the people who can't. So that, you know, having their patronage is good, because then the people who are really struggling from day to day, that gives us the opportunity to be able to subsidise their goods. We tried to get local charities interested in a pantry, but many of them, they felt it wasn't in their normal stream of business. So for us to get going, we needed to have charity registration or be auspiced. And we approached the Southern Women's Group, and they agreed to auspice us, which gave us access to our major grocery supplier, which is Food Bank, a not-for-profit charity that rescues good food and also buys it in bulk, and it services all the charities that run food banks. And we did that. We thought, we'll do that for a while. We'll be auspiced, just a trial, you know, suck it and see. And then we need a premises. The good old Salvation Army stepped up and said, look, you can have the front of our Salvation Army store in Bega, you know, for your trial. And we figured we'll trial it for 6 months and see what happens. So it was a tiny space. We were so excited. We, you know, set up a steering committee. We got volunteers interested. We got people donating seed money to us. We needed money to be able to buy stock and to buy shelving and things like that. And the first day we opened at Bega, I think we had 100 people. And that was the very first day. And I honestly look back now, and that was 3 years ago, and I think, how the heck did we manage, you know? Because there were so little space and so many people, but we did. And we had a lot of support from people like Larry's Lettuces at Millingandy, from Woolworths and Coles in collecting their excess. We did have a lot of community support coming from all sorts of places.
And it's obviously grown from there. What's the patronage like at the moment?
We've got around 2,500 members of the pantry. Now, that isn't, if I was audited, that's not an accurate figure, because sometimes the numbers are a bit of doubled up and stuff, but it gives an indication. We have a membership. Anybody can shop. They don't have to be members. But to be a member, you get a 5% discount and a little shopping bag of goodies. And to be honest, it also gives us the ability to do a quick demographic survey of people when they sign up, so that we know if they're male, female, what postcode area they live in, if they've suffered food insecurity, what age group, those sorts of things, which are very useful for when you then go and seek funding and seek, you know, support from government and from business.
Have you looked into that? Like, who is your customer base?
Our customer base is mainly people who are unemployed or not earning a decent income. Their age groups, surprisingly, around the 35 to 50 level. There's about a third of our customer base suffer from a disability. And I'd say at least 70% have suffered what's called food insecurity in the past 6 months. Now, that could be you're not sure where your next meal's coming from, or you're down to your last dollar. You know, you've got to go buy food and you've only got $5 or something for the whole family for the week. We have in the Bega Valley quite a lot of people who are classified as homeless, which would surprise people.
Because they're not sitting on the streets, are they, like they would in Melbourne or Sydney?
Well, you don't see them on the streets. They might be sleeping under a bridge, sleeping in a tent on the beach, or they're couch surfing, or they're sleeping in their car. It's a lot of invisibility, and it's interesting because this week is Homelessness Week. Mm. And I think, you know, people think where this area is a rich area, and there are pockets of wealth, but there are very high pockets of poverty. And also rent is quite expensive around here. I'm surprised at how expensive it can be. And finding a house to rent is quite difficult, and particularly now since the fires, you know, have been through.
Of course.
There's a lot more competition. So we do have quite a few homeless, quite a few people in need. Now we also have the silent poverty, the old age pensioners,
yes,
who are very proud and who are struggling, though, from week to week.
Mm.
And I think we have a high level of malnutrition in the area too, where people find it difficult to cook for themselves. So they are actually living on toast. or cereal or something like that. I have no figures to support that. It's just that I have been, I'm surprised at the number of people I've been speaking to recently who've told me how their health has been affected by not having good food.
You guys obviously supply grocery type stuff in the supermarket style in the pantry there. But you go further than that, don't you? I note that I've seen you doing work with characters like South Coast Community Kitchen or the Too Good Co. Tell us a little bit about that other work.
Well, we were approached a few months ago by a social venture called Too Good Company, based in Sydney. It was set up by three guys who wanted to help women's refuges and find employment for women who've escaped domestic violence. These guys maybe it was their main business, but were selling things like face creams and what have you. But they built up this business where they have chefs, and I'm talking about chefs like the ones who would appear on Master Cooking, all those big shows, working with them to develop menus. And then they've got some paid chefs who actually help women from refuges learn how to cook good, inexpensive, nutritious meals. But they also run a business of catering to the corporates. So they are delivering lunches to the big businesses. They're having a function. They're doing those sorts of things. They've also got a cleaning company. And now Too Good was delivering frozen meals down to women's refuges in Bateman's Bay. And I'm not really sure how they got onto us, but it was the blessed, absolutely blessed thing that they did, because they turned up with 600 beautifully made frozen meals for us, which we've been distributing out to people, who come to the pantry, or we hear of somebody, I'll give you an example. There's an older fellow whose wife has Alzheimer's. He's probably never cooked in his life. Now he has to try and learn to cook for her and him and do nutritious meals. And whilst he said he's enjoying it, he's not skilled at it. So I think it's all a lot of trial and error now. I think they're both in their 80s. So we've been giving them these delicious meals, as well as fresh fruit and veg and things, and giving them recipes and stuff.
And they're probably not alone in that, are they?
No, I'm sure they're not. He's just one person who's told me that. And we've also taken the meals out. When we go out to Bemboka, and next month we'll be going out to Korma with a mobile pantry. Basically, we load up our little personal ute. We go out to Bemboka. We take a selection of the groceries we have here, including fruit and veg, and we have them in the Bemboka Hall. And we also take these meals out there. And this community pantry, travelling pantry, it's been an absolute blessing for many people, because I'll just use Bemboka as an example. A lot of the older people there are isolating and they're too scared to come into town, or they haven't got transport. Or perhaps they're really, really poor and they can't afford to go. I don't know what they've been living on, quite frankly. And we've had people with tears in their eyes saying, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for coming out here. We've been feeling forgotten during these bushfires. Everyone talks about everywhere else, but nobody thinks of us. And it's just a lovely, lovely time to come out here and have this happening. So that's one of our other projects, to take the pantry out to the bush.
You've kind of segued quite well here, that I note that you, during the sort of aftermath of the bushfire situation, the food bank organisation delivered you guys a whole lot of hampers, which were then delivered out to communities around here that were affected. But I note that food banks are now saying that they're having a bit of trouble financially. How are you guys going?
Well, the pantry itself is, we're giving out as much as we can for free. So we're digging into our cash reserves, but we're okay. I mean, we're not going to go out backwards. Now, what we're doing with Food Bank, for example, we're paying for the hampers now, $10 per hamper, which is, quite cheap, because the value of the contents is probably around $40 to $50. And we are buying these. And we put a call out on our Facebook page that if anybody was interested in donating just even $10 or even $2 or $5, that will feed, a family, that money. And so we've had a fairly good response to that too. So we've been able to give out hampers. We're giving them to Katungal. We've taken them up to Cobargo, to Corma, to Bemboka, to Mission Australia, to so many places, and to individuals who come into the pantry and say, look, I've got nothing. My place is burnt down. I haven't got a job. I can't afford anything. So we give them a hamper or two to see them through. And also we've got a little secret stash here as well of groceries that people have donated to us. We give them those. And if we have to, we take stuff off the shelves as well. So as a president, my view of the pantry is we're not in it to become wealthy. We're in it to be sustainable, but, you know, the whole purpose we're here is to help people. And our major thing is nourishing the community. That is our goal, our aim, our vision, nourish the community. And we chose that word because it means more than food.
Mm.
Food is, you know, the basic. You absolutely need food and shelter. But further up the line, you need warmth, you need companionship, you need, you know, company, you need people. And we try and do that. And before COVID, we had a coffee shop here, not your normal coffee shop, you know, it was just, the spot we're in now, we could do with something four times the size now, but it's in a little side part. We've got a proper coffee machine, and we had a couple of long tables where people could sit around. We had free cakes that people would bring in, and we'd offer tea, coffee, soup, whatever they wanted. Unfortunately, since COVID, you know, we've had to back that away a bit now as far as having people come in and sit down, but we are offering takeout. That provided a meeting place for people to sit down, have a chat, have a quiet chat, not feel under pressure to vacate the table because customers were coming in. And also a cup of coffee, it mightn't sound much to you or me, you know, $4 or $5.
Mm.
But in the scheme of things, when you've got a very limited budget, that's an awful lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
That's a luxury. So people would have it, would they have a free, or if they could afford, you know, a gold coin, that's all we'd ask for, if they could afford it. If they couldn't, well, that's all right. I mean, we've got our regulars who still come. We've got Robbie, who you may have seen around town. Robbie's in a wheelchair, like motorised wheelchair. He comes around every Tuesday and Thursday. And Sue Ritzy, who's our barista, she knows Robbie and she gets a cup of coffee for him. She's got a special cup for him because he's a little bit, his hands are a little bit, yeah, difficult to sort of get around a ordinary cup. And so she has his cup of coffee ready for him and a couple of biscuits for him. And he's happy. That's his little outing for the morning. So when I say nourishing people, you know, that's one of the things we do. And I get told time and time again, and you might be able to hear the enthusiasm in my voice, but people love coming here because it doesn't feel like a charity. It doesn't feel like you're judged. You're made welcome. We have the most wonderful team of volunteers you'd ever find. They're all friendly. They're all helpful. And we just love having people come in. We've also been a sort of a central point, a distribution point for goods for people affected by bushfires. So we've been working with two charities in particular. One was called Give It and the other one is called Good 360. And those charities, Give It, it's like a matchmaker. Someone, a business or an individual has goods that they want to give to a charity, but they don't know who, and Give It sources the charity and arranges those. Then we've also received lots of kitchen items, such as tea towels, knives, brand new cutting boards, brand new saucepan sets worth nearly $1,000, you know, a great amount of stuff via Give It. That has been going out to the bushfire relief centres and to individuals. And through Good 360, we received towels and doonas, brand new, all this brand new stuff that we've also been giving out. So we've acted as a sort of a bit of a central clearinghouse. If we see that there's a need, that it nourishes the community, we're there, we'll help.
You obviously operate on volunteers. Can people get involved? Can people help at the moment?
Yes, we can always do the volunteers. we, you know, you have to be a special sort of person, be willing to be non-judgmental, because it's really important to us that anybody who comes shopping at the pantry, no matter what, you know, small town, everyone knows everybody, and, you know, they may have particular views about people, and they may wonder, well, why are they shopping here? But look, we don't care. It's none of our business. If you're incredibly rich and you pull up in a Rolls Royce and come in and shop, well, good on you, because you're shopping, because we buy our goods from Food Bank and we put a little bit of cost recovery on the top to cover rent and other things. Mm. So your shopping actually helps us pay the rent.
Obviously, one of the ways they can help is by coming and shopping there and spending a little bit of money. But if people want to make donations or help out in any way like that, how might they go about that?
Okay, well, if they have Facebook, the best way is to go to and do a search for Sapphire Community Projects, Inc. or Sapphire Community Pantry, and you'll find the details about how to make a donation. Or they can come in and just make a cash donation. Or they may, and, you know, donations are not just money. We love it if you have an excess of fruit and veg in your garden. You can bring it in. We'd love it. Or if you're perhaps cleaning out your pantry and you've got stuff that, you know, you or somebody's moved and you've got too much food, providing it's not open and it's not, you know, 40 years old, if you wanted to do that, we're open Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays from 11 till 2. That's for shoppers to come in. But we also have our volunteers generally start about 9 a.m. So even if the doors are shut and you want to drop something off, just knock on the door and we'll let you in.
Christine Welsh is the president of Sapphire Coast Community Projects, who run the community pantry based here in Bega. The pantry is open 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events and personalities from around the Bega Valley. The Local Update recognises the Yuin people as the traditional owners of the lands we broadcast on and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging. You can find any info about the Local Update on indiemedia.com.au. New episodes are out every Wednesday at 9 a.m. My name's Indy Wood. Thank you again for your company. I'll catch you again next week. Bye now.